people at the door exchange pleasantries when introduced to others and offer food or drink to a visitor. These are all obvious, expected, and practiced. These same concepts should be practiced in the classroom at all grade levels. Walk around and see if your classroom is inviting. What's a student's or visitor's first impression? Is the door clearly marked? Are welcome and information signs posted? Are signs written in jargon? Is the first assignment clear and understandable? Are there clues that show you care for young people? The effective teacher is committed to seeing all people as able, valuable, responsible, and possessing untapped potential in all worthwhile areas of human endeavor. The person who is asked or complimented is invited. The person who is not asked or complimented is disinvited. This concept was formulated by William W. Perkey and is known as invitational education. Until I was 13, I thought my name was Shut Up. Joe Namath. Success is easy. Teresa A. Borges of American High School in Miami says, "Success is easy. Pay attention to the students. Like a detective, listen to what they have to say. I notice and compliment a new haircut and new shirt, and especially a right answer. I analyze handwriting for original work. I offer lunchtime tutoring. I call back every parent by the end of the same day. I never get a second request from a parent for a contact or phone call. I visit students in the hospital, go to funerals, unfortunately, and make awards for students who achieve perfect scores on tests. I put stickers on perfect papers, even in Algebra 2. I read about our athletes in the paper and go to games that I can attend. I know what video games they like and the things you can learn on MySpace. Of course, knowing your curriculum is vital, but knowing your students takes time and leads to success." Teresa Borges knows how to invite her students to learn. I have come to a frightening conclusion. I am the decisive element in the classroom. It is my personal approach that creates the climate. It is my daily mood that makes the weather. As a teacher, I possess tremendous power to make a child's life miserable or joyous. I can be a tool of torture or an instrument of inspiration. I can humiliate or humor, hurt or heal. In all situations, it is my response that decides whether a crisis will be escalated or de-escalated, and a child humanized or dehumanized. Chaim Gnat, Teacher and Child, 1976, Avon Books. Are you invitational or disinvitational? Inviting verbal comments. Good morning. Congratulations. I appreciate your help. Tell me about it. Disinviting verbal comments. It won't work. I don't care what you do. You can't do that. Because I said so, that's why. Inviting personal behaviors. Smiling. Listening. Thumbs up or high five. Holding a door open. Disinviting personal behaviors. Sneering. Looking at your watch. Shoving. Letting a door close on a person behind you. Inviting physical environment. Fresh paint, living plants, clean walls, comfortable furniture. Disinviting physical environment. Dark corridors. No plants. Bad odor. Beat up or uncomfortable furniture. Inviting thoughts, self-talk. Making mistakes is all right. I've misplaced my keys. I could learn to do that. Sometimes I have to think what to say. Disinviting thoughts, self-talk. Why am I so stupid? I've lost my keys again. I never could do that. I never know what to say. I'm so slow to catch on. You are a significant person. Invitational education states that all individuals have significant people in their lives. These include teachers, leaders, mentors, colleagues, bosses, parents, relatives, coaches, administrators, spouses, and close friends. Everyone is special. Students are influenced more by the depth of your conviction than the height of your intelligence. The goal is changing students not to your way of thinking, but to your way of feeling. Students can refuse words, but they cannot refuse an invitational attitude. The invitational messages that are extended exist in the minds of the significant people who influence the lives of other people. Effective teachers have the power and the ability to invite students and colleagues to learn together each day in every class. Attentiveness, expectancy, attitude, enthusiasm, and evaluation are the primary forces behind a teacher's being inviting or disinviting. These are the characteristics that significantly influence a student's self-concept and increase or decrease the probability of student learning. Wayne Hill of Mesa, Arizona, has a way of telling his students that they are significant people. On the first day of class, before introduction of the class, I greet the students by holding up a $20 bill and asking who would like the $20. Obviously, many hands go up. I crumple the bill and again ask the same question, and hands go up. I throw the bill onto the floor, stomp and smash the bill into the floor. I hold it up again and ask the same question. All hands go up. I ask the students why they still want the $20 after I have crushed, stomped, and smashed it. Their response is always, "Because it is still worth $20. It has not lost its value." I explain to the students that sometimes in life, we feel like we have been stepped on and made to feel dirty. But never forget that someone at home or someone here at school cares about you. I tell them, "You are special to me. Don't ever forget." When I discuss the dismissal procedure for the class, I explain that I dismiss the class, not the bell. I dismiss the class only after all students are seated and quiet. I simply say, "Don't ever forget." The class responds, "We are special." They leave the class, and often I hear the kids repeating as they walk out the door, "We are special." When they see me on the campus, they shout out to me, "Hello, Mr. Hill. We are special." You are important to me as a person. This is the message that we all need to convey to our students and our colleagues every day. If only the finest birds in the forest dared sing, how quiet the forest would be. If only the best readers dared read, how ignorant our country would be. If only the best singers dared sing, how sad our country would be. If only the best athletes engaged in sports, how weak our country would be. If only the best lovers made love, where would you and I be? I would be tired. William W. Perkey. Every teacher, every professor, every educator ought to spend time in a kindergarten or first grade class each year just to look at and feel the excitement there. Children get excited about everything in the world. All the world is their stage, and there is nothing they cannot do, even though they cannot read, write, or spell. Yet they are ready to do anything you want them to do. Then look at their teachers. They know their charges cannot read, write, spell, or even speak correctly. Some of these students do not even know how to eat, use the bathroom, or hang up their jackets without help. Yet these teachers do not complain that they have a bunch of low achievers. Instead, their classrooms and their demeanors sparkle with invitational attitudes toward learning, treating everyone as high achievers. Everyone is a VIP. Oklahoma City Principal Sharon Krieger keeps a VIP book in her office with this inscription on the inside cover. Congratulations to these very important pupils who have distinguished themselves in various ways. These are the stars of our future. Teachers send students to the office to have their names entered in the VIP book. The book is on permanent display in the hall and has never been vandalized. Each morning, the new VIP names are read on the morning announcements. The four levels of invitational education. There are four levels of invitations that are issued to students. 1. Intentionally disinviting. 2. Unintentionally disinviting. 3. Unintentionally inviting. And 4. Intentionally inviting. These levels can determine your effectiveness as a teacher. 1. Intentionally disinviting. This is the bottom level at which a few curmudgeonly teachers operate. They deliberately demean, discourage, defeat, and dissuade students. They use expressions like these. Why do you bother coming to school? I've only given one A in the 16 years that I've been teaching. You will never amount to anything. And they never smile. 2. Unintentionally disinviting. Some teachers are oblivious to the fact that they are negative people. They feel that they are well-meaning, but are seen by others as chauvinistic, condescending, racist, sexist, patronizing, or thoughtless. They make comments like these. I teach only students who want to learn. If you don't want to learn, that's your problem. These people just don't have the capacity to do any better. I was hired to teach history, not to do these other things. And they keep their arms folded when interacting with students. 3. Unintentionally inviting. These are the natural-born teachers. Such teachers are generally well-liked and effective, but are unaware of why they are effective. They are usually affable, and this characteristic often hides the fact that their students may not be learning to their fullest potential. These teachers are sincere, they try very hard, and we generally like to have them as friends. They offer remarks like these. Aren't you sweet? Charge! Let's go, team! That's neat! Just try harder. And they bubble with excitement. 4. Intentionally inviting. Intentionally inviting teachers have a professional attitude, work diligently and consistently, and strive to be more effective teachers. They have a sound philosophy of education and can analyze the process of student learning. Most important, they are purposively and explicitly invitational. They know what it means to be invitational, and they work at it. They say things like this. Good morning. Have a great day. If you try this, you'll be sensational. I know that someday you will be the best at... Would you like to help me? They also use the proper emotion at the appropriate time. Effective teachers know how to open the door and invite their students to learn. When you apply the power of positive expectations and invitational education, you become a very powerful and effective teacher. Go be. You're invited. More information on invitational education is in the Going Beyond folder for Chapter 9 at effectiveteaching.com. The effective teacher, 1, has an inviting personality. 2. Creates an inviting classroom environment. 3. works at being intentionally inviting. 10. How to increase positive student behavior. The key idea. The heart of education is the education of the heart. Life is not a destination. Life is a journey. As long as you continue the journey, you will always be a success. Albert Camus. 5 significant concepts. When you look at truly effective teachers, you will also find caring, warm, lovable people. Effective teaching is all about teacher-student relationships. The easiest way to build relationships with students is to use a well-managed classroom where students are on task, allowing you to spend one-to-one time with them. Students, parents, teachers, everyone thrives on connections. Students need role models. Students need heroes they can look up to, someone to connect with, and that someone can be a teacher. The success of a person's journey through life can be influenced by the significant people with whom we make connections. Significant people understand and use 5 significant concepts that help people achieve whatever they want in life. These concepts are addressing a person by name, saying please and thank you, smiling, and showing care and warmth. Address each student by name. Effective salespeople employ a very simple but valuable technique. They find out your name, introduce themselves to you, and then use your proper name every 7 to 10 sentences when they talk to you. Why? When you address someone by name, you are treating that person with dignity and respect. Your name is very important. It identifies and dignifies you. Other people in the world may have the same name as yours, but as far as you are concerned, you are the only person in the world with your name. It is a name that you can easily hear called above the din of a crowd. And when you hear your name, you pay attention. Salespeople know this when they use your name. You pay attention. You pay attention because you are important. Effective teachers use names, especially when they want a student to do something or behave in a certain way. When you address a student, use the student's name. Use a student's name in a friendly, respectful manner. Never address a student in an angry or condescending tone. This is a put-down of a person's identity and dignity. Pronounce the student's name correctly. A person's name is precious and personal. It is that person's property. It is imperative that students hear the correct pronunciation of names. Failure to do so will tell the students they do not have to respect each other's names and as a result can tease, mock, and make fun of each other's names. When you use a person's name, you are saying to that person, "You are important. You are important enough for me to identify you by name." When you use a person's name, you are saying, "I care enough to know who you are." The depth of your heart determines the height of your dreams. People in our culture are starved for attention. The average child receives an estimated 12 minutes of attention each day from his or her parents. By age 18, most Americans have spent more time in front of the television than they have with friends or parents. The average adolescent spends more than 3 hours alone every day. Loneliness is the number one problem of the elderly, many of whom are afraid to venture out of their homes or apartments. The Carnegie Foundation surveyed 22,000 teachers. 90% said that a lack of parental support was a problem at their schools. 89% said that there were abused or neglected children at their schools. 69% stated that poor health was a problem for their students. 68% reported that some children were undernourished. 100% described their students as emotionally needy and starved for attention and affection. Repetition is the key. For a child to learn something new, you need to repeat it an average of 8 times. For a child to unlearn an old behavior and replace it with a new behavior, you need to repeat the new behavior an average of 28 times. 20 of those times are used to eliminate the old behavior, and 8 of the times are used to learn the new behavior. After Madeline Hunter. Say please, please. Cultured, polite people can be identified by their manners. The heart of courtesy is respect for persons. Courtesy and respect convey a message that says, I am paying attention to you. The neglect of courtesy leads to the collapse of community, and this can be seen in ineffective schools and classrooms where people demean one another. People who neglect to say please, even when speaking to children, are teaching impressionable youngsters that it is all right to bark orders and to run roughshod over the dignity of others. The youngsters may not react or respond, but they resent the lack of courtesy implicit in such treatment. When you fail to say please and couch your request as an order, you are slowly chipping away at that person's freedom and dignity. And many of our children come to school having been yelled at all day and night with none of their freedom and dignity intact. When you say, would you please get me a bottle of glue? It is in fact shorthand for saying, if you please, if it gives you pleasure, get me a bottle of glue. You are asking the person not only to help, but also to feel kindly toward you. Please is an acknowledgement of that kindness. When you say please, you are, in effect, saying, I respect you and your kindness and your worth as a human being. Kindness begins with the word please. Cultured, polite, and well-mannered people automatically use the word please. They have learned appropriate behavior. Repetitive use of the word please is important if a child is to learn to use the word please in his or her life. Please is usually used when you ask someone to do something for you. Thus, the most effective way to use please is to precede the word with the person's name, as in, Trevor, please. Consider adding the word please to instructions on your worksheets, assignments, and other papers that you distribute in class. I really appreciate what you did. Thank you. You really cannot use please without using thank you. The two just go together. Not using the two together would be like having a knife without a fork, a belt without a buckle, a letter without an envelope. When you say thank you, you are acknowledging that someone did something kindly for you, and not because you ordered them to do it. Thank you says to others that you appreciate their effort and kindness. If you have expectations that students will work hard and will learn to be kind, then saying thank you is your way of acknowledging that they have been kind and diligent and that you appreciate what they have done for you. Thank you is the perfect transition. It paves the way to the next request, lesson, activity, or task in class. It makes whatever you want done next much easier. The most effective way to use thank you is to use it with the person's name. I truly appreciate what you did. Thank you, George. Or, George, I truly appreciate what you did. Thank you. Consider adding the words thank you to instructions on your worksheets, assignments, and other papers that you distribute in class. Please. No, no problem. Thank you. The worst response to thank you is no problem. This implies that the task was a problem. A more appropriate response to thank you is my pleasure, indicating that the task was done with pleasure and not because it was a problem. Our business. Ours is not the business of producing doctors or lawyers or teachers or nurses or scientists or policemen or salespeople or factory workers or higher test scores. Ours is the business of producing smiles on young faces, happiness in young hearts, and dreams in young minds. The rest will take care of itself. Dan Seufert. A smile, the frosting on the cake. If you truly want to achieve maximum effectiveness when you use a person's name and say please and thank you, smile. It requires no effort and is even easier than frowning. Smiling uses far fewer muscles than frowning, and hence is less tiring to do. But like using please and thank you, smiling is a behavioral trait that is learned. A smile is like that sprig of parsley on the dinner plate, the extra pat on the back when a job has been done well, or the extra hug that says, I really love you. It's the frosting on the cake, the little lagniappe that sets you apart. It communicates three things. One, you are a person who knows the ultimate of hospitality and graciousness. Two, you have that little extra bit of polish or panache that marks you as a cultured person. Three, you feel good about yourself and want others to feel good about themselves, too. A smile is the universal language of understanding, peace, and harmony. If indeed we want the next generation to have a world of peace and understanding, we need to teach its sign, a smile. A smile is the most effective way to create a positive climate, to disarm an angry person, and to convey the message, do not be afraid of me. I am here to help you. There is no need for a great big smile. A controlled, slight, disarming smile is all you need. Accompany the smile with the name of the person. As you smile and speak, use momentary pauses. This is called timing. Every performer knows that the key to delivering a speech, telling a joke, or giving a performance is timing. This is the pregnant pause before speaking an important or emotional line, or the punchline. A smile is a light to tell people that your heart is connected with theirs. Lynn Birdsong, Howard County Public Schools, Maryland. Technique for smiling, speaking, and pausing. Step 1. Smile. Smile as you approach the student, even if your first impulse is to behave harshly toward the student. Step 2. Feedback. Observe the reaction to your smile. Are you receiving a smile in return, or at least a signal that the student is relaxing and receptive to your approach? Step 3. Pause. Timing, timing. Step 4. Name. Say, Nathan, with a slight smile. Step 5. Pause. Step 6. Please. Add please followed by your request. Do this in a calm, firm voice, accompanied by a slight, non-threatening smile. Step 7. Pause. Step 8. Thank you. End with, thank you, Nathan, and a slight smile. Example. Nathan, please stop talking to Joey and get to work on your assignment. Thank you, Nathan. Slight smile. Practice this in a mirror over and over again. Notes in a lunchbox. Every day, along with a frosted cupcake, Kimberly jotted down a few words of loving encouragement on a note that she placed in her son Kenny's lunch bag. And every afternoon, Kenny returned his lunch bag with her note inside. Kimberly often wondered if he even read the notes. One day, Kenny returned his lunch bag without the note. Out of curiosity, his mother asked, "Honey, where's your note?" Kenny looked at her, not sure if he had done something wrong. I gave it to Tim, he said. His mother doesn't give him notes, and I, well, I thought he could use mine.
You did? Kimberly questioned.
Yeah. His mother is really sick, and he's so sad right now,
Kenny explained.
Maybe you can write a note for him tomorrow, or maybe I can give him the one you wrote last Thursday. That was a good one.
There will never be a shortage of love. Love is the reason for teaching. It costs nothing, yet it is the most precious thing one can possess. The more we give, the more it is returned. It heals and protects, soothes and strengthens. Love has other names, such as forgiveness, tolerance, mercy, encouragement, aid, sympathy, affection, friendliness, and cheer. No matter how much love we give to others, more rushes in to take its place. It is really the gift that keeps on giving. Give love in abundance every day. It all adds up to love. Only two things are necessary for a happy and successful life: being lovable and being capable. The effective teacher never stops looking for ways of being more and more capable. When you look at the truly effective teachers, you will also find caring, warm, lovable people. Years later, when students remember their most significant teachers, the ones they will remember most are the ones who really cared about them. Effective teachers know they cannot get a student to learn unless that student knows the teacher cares. Ineffective teachers think all they have to do is offer a product, as in, I was hired to teach history, or I was hired to teach third grade. Effective teachers offer more than a product. They offer a service, too. Effective teachers can help students learn as well as enhance the quality of their lives. They offer this service consistently because they are practicing this same belief on themselves as they increase their own effectiveness in life. The sincerest form of service requires no money, no training, no special clothes, and no college degrees. The sincerest form of service comes from listening, caring, and loving. Love is the reason for teaching. It costs nothing, yet it is the most precious thing one can possess. You don't need to tell all the members of a class that you love them, but you certainly can show it. If you choose to be a significant and effective person in a student's life, you must demonstrate your care and love both implicitly through your body language and explicitly through what you say. When significant people use significant words and actions, they increase the likelihood of eliciting positive behaviors from other people. Thank you for being a positive role model for your students. Teachers do it all. There are no commercial programs, no websites, and no books on teaching love as a unit. We are our best source, each of us. What we are, our attitudes and behaviors, reflect onto others and teach them about love. The best teachers teach from both the head and the heart. Effective teaching has very little to do with programs and structural changes. Programs do not teach kids. Changing class size does not teach kids. Teachers teach kids. Programs do not make mean teachers nice. Programs do not turn ineffective teachers into effective teachers. Programs do not understand that half the class does not speak English. Programs do not give a student a caring smile or a kind touch. Programs do not say please or thank you. Programs do not believe in kids. Teachers do all this and more. Go be. We'll stand behind you. She was scared to give her report. How the class supported a nervous student is shared in the Going Beyond folder for Chapter 10 at effectiveteaching.com. Love is life,
And if you miss love, you miss life. Leo Biscaglia. The effective teacher, 1, addresses people by name. 2, says please and thank you. 3, has a controlled, disarming smile. 4, is loving and caring, lovable and capable. Unit C. Second characteristic. Classroom management. The effective teacher is an extremely good classroom manager. 11. How to have a well-managed classroom. The key idea: the effective teacher is able to organize a well-managed classroom where students can learn in a task-oriented environment. The first thing you need to know: classroom management overarches everything in the curriculum. Possibly the most important unit in this book. We have identified the single most important factor that governs student learning. In a study reviewing 11,000 pieces of research that spanned 50 years, 3 researchers determined that there are 28 factors that influence student learning and placed them in rank order. The most important factor governing student learning is classroom management. Thus, Unit C may be the most important unit for you. The least important factor is the demographics of the student body. That is, race, skin color, gender, national and religious background, and the financial status of the family are the least important factors that determine student achievement. So once and for all, let's stop using the demographics or culture of the students as an excuse for the lack of achievement. How you manage the classroom is the primary determinant of how well your students will learn. The first days of school is based on the following research findings. Effective teachers have 3 characteristics. 1, they have classroom management skills. 2, they teach for lesson mastery. 3, they practice positive expectations. Classroom management skills are of primary importance in determining teaching success. The number one factor governing student learning is classroom management. The first day of school is the most important of the school year. Effective classroom management practices must begin on the first day of school. Based on these findings, this is a statement of dignity for the teaching profession. It is the teacher, what the teacher knows and can do, that makes the difference in the classroom. Effective teachers manage their classrooms. The fact that you know how to cook a steak does not make you a successful restaurateur. For that, you need to know about accounting procedures, federal, state, and local regulations, sanitation laws, union agreements, and worker and customer relationships. How to cook a steak is the last thing you need to know. The first thing you need to know is how to manage the restaurant. The fact that you have a college degree in English does not make you an English teacher. The first thing you need to know is how to have a well-managed classroom, and then, in Unit D, how to deliver the instruction and assess for student learning. Effective teachers manage their classrooms. Ineffective teachers discipline their classrooms. Students want a well-managed classroom more than the teachers do because it provides them with security in the classroom that is consistent. There are no surprises and no yelling in a classroom where everyone, teacher and students, knows what is happening. Consistency comes from implementing procedures and routines. Nothing will send kids into orbit faster than letting them suspect that their teacher is disorganized. Disorganized teachers think only about presenting lessons, lectures, worksheets, videos, activities, never management. And when classrooms aren't managed, they become chaotic and less productive. Therefore, The most important thing a teacher can provide in the classroom during the first week of school is consistency. Classroom practices and procedures must be predictable and consistent. The students must know from day to day how the classroom is structured and organized. If they break a pencil point, they know what to do. If they are tardy, or they need help from the teacher, or they must walk down the hall, or they need to move from one activity to another, they know what to do. There is no yelling of instructions. Think back to Chapter 1 and the student from the high-poverty school in an at-risk community who said, "I like coming to this school because everyone knows what to do. As a result, no one is yelling and screaming at us, and we can get on with learning." The key word in the student's statement is do. In an effective classroom, the students are responsible for doing the procedures organized for their learning. In an ineffective classroom, the teacher is constantly concerned with student behavior. The aim of education is to provide children with a sense of purpose and a sense of possibility, and with skills and habits of thinking that will help them live in the world. Alice Waters. Alice Waters, who introduced California cuisine to the world, is noted not only for her skill in the kitchen, but also for her skill in running her restaurant, Chez Panisse, in Berkeley, California. Go Be, the edible schoolyard. Read how Alice Waters put her aim of education quote into action in the Going Beyond folder for Chapter 11 at effectiveteaching.com. What is classroom management? Classroom management refers to all of the things a teacher does to organize students, space, time and materials so student learning can take place. Brophy and Evertson say, "Almost all surveys of teacher effectiveness report that classroom management skills are of primary importance in determining teaching success, whether it is measured by student learning or by ratings. Thus, management skills are crucial and fundamental. A teacher who is grossly inadequate in classroom management skills is probably not going to accomplish much." Classroom management skills includes the things a teacher must do toward two ends. One, foster student involvement and cooperation in all classroom activities. Two, establish a productive working environment. A well-managed classroom has a set of procedures and routines that structure the classroom. Refer to chapters 19 and 20. The procedures and routines organize the classroom so that the myriad of activities that take place there function smoothly and stress-free. These activities may include reading, taking notes, participating in group work, taking part in class discussions, participating in games, and producing materials. An effective teacher has every student involved and cooperating in all of these activities and more. Unit C will help you accomplish the dual goals of fostering student involvement and creating a productive working atmosphere so you can be a very effective teacher. In an effective classroom, there is structure that provides for an environment conducive to learning. The students are working. They are paying attention. They are cooperative and respectful of each other. They exhibit self-discipline, and they remain on task. All materials are ready and organized. The furniture is arranged for productive work, and a calm and positive climate prevails. Too many teachers do not teach. They do activities. And when problems arise, they discipline. Many classrooms are unmanaged, and when classrooms are not organized, little is accomplished in them. Characteristics of a well-managed classroom. You expect a department store to be well-managed. When asked what that means, you would probably list some of these characteristics. The store, its layout, organization, and cleanliness. The merchandise, its display, accessibility, and availability. The staff, their management, efficiency, knowledge, and friendliness. You could probably do the same for a restaurant, an airline, or a doctor's office. In fact, you have probably said more than once, "If I ran this place, I would do things differently." Well, since you run a classroom, what is it that you do? It is called classroom management, and the characteristics of a well-managed classroom are well known. Unit C is devoted to getting you up to speed as quickly as possible with everything you need to know about how to get your classroom running and organized for student success. The characteristics of a well-managed classroom. 1. Students are deeply involved with their work, especially with academic, teacher-led instruction. 2. Students know what is expected of them and are generally successful. 3. There is relatively little wasted time, confusion, or disruption. 4. The climate of the classroom is work-oriented, but relaxed and pleasant. Techniques to help you implement the 4 characteristics of a well-managed classroom. 1. High level of student involvement with work. Effective teacher, students are working. Ineffective teacher, teacher is working. 2. Clear student expectations. Effective teacher, students know that assignments are based on objectives. Ineffective teacher, teacher says, "Read chapter 3 and know the material." Effective teacher, students know that tests are based on objectives. Ineffective teacher, "I'll give you a test covering everything in chapter 3. 3. Relatively little wasted time, confusion, or disruption. Effective teacher, teacher has procedures and routines. Ineffective teacher, teacher makes up rules and punishes according to his or her mood. Effective teacher, teacher starts class immediately. Ineffective teacher, teacher takes roll and dallies. Effective teacher, teacher has assignments posted. Ineffective teacher, students ask for assignments repeatedly. 4. Work-oriented but relaxed and pleasant climate. Effective teacher, teacher has invested time in practicing procedures until they become routines. Ineffective teacher, teacher tells but does not rehearse procedures. Effective teacher, teacher knows how to bring class to attention. Ineffective teacher, teacher yells and flicks light switch. Effective teacher, teacher knows how to praise the deed and encourage the student. Ineffective teacher, teacher uses generalized praise or none at all. It works so well, it's scary. I start each class with a Constitution Minute, CM. The CMs are actual transcripts from NBC Radio that were broadcast during the bicentennial of the U.S. Constitution. Several weeks before, each student is given a copy of the actual transcript. Each student is assigned a date of delivery in front of the class. Transcripts are to be memorized. Ideas for effective presentation are discussed. Procedures for the presenter's expectations are discussed. Procedures for the listener's expectations are discussed. On the day of delivery, the student presenter proceeds to the front of the room ready to present his or her CM before the class begins. The rest of the class is seated and ready to listen and take a few brief notes. 1 minute after the bell rings, the presenter begins the CM. Approximately 1 minute later, the CM is over and the presenter sits down. The class checks the front board for the schedule, procedure, or assignment for the day. During this time, I sit quietly in the back of the room and listen, grading the presentation, taking the roll, and so on. The class automatically starts itself. They're quiet, they're organized, they're ready to learn, they know what is expected. It works so well, it's scary. Within 2 minutes, the class is ready, and I haven't said a word, and yet we have accomplished one learning activity, all managed by procedures. Arthur H. Kavanaugh, Ambler, Pennsylvania. A task-oriented and predictable environment. A well-managed classroom has a task-oriented environment where students know what is expected of them and how to succeed. According to research, most students will make better achievement gains in a well-managed classroom. A well-managed classroom has a predictable environment. Both teacher and students know what to do and what is supposed to happen in the classroom. Because you have chosen to manage the classroom environment, you should be able to close your eyes and not only envision learning taking place, but also know why it is taking place. It is the responsibility of the teacher to manage a classroom and to ensure that a task-oriented and predictable environment has been established. The effective teacher, 1, works on having a well-managed classroom. 2, establishes consistency in the classroom. 3, has students working on task. 4, has a classroom with little confusion or wasted time. 12. How to have your classroom ready. The key idea: teachers who are ready maximize student learning and minimize student misbehavior. Half of your effectiveness is determined before you leave home. The amount of work you will accomplish will be determined before you even leave for work. Half of what you will accomplish in a day will be determined before you even leave home. 3/4 of what you will accomplish in a day will be determined before you enter the school door. You need to prepare yourself both academically and attitudinally before you leave home and as you travel to school. You increase the chance of student successes and decrease the chance of student disruptions if the materials, classroom climate, and teacher are ready before the students arrive. Why effective teachers have a minimum of problems. The effective teacher has a minimum of student misbehavior problems to handle. The ineffective teacher is constantly fighting student misbehavior problems. Yet the situation is easy to remedy. Don't be ineffective. You and your students will pay for it. Ineffective teachers have classrooms that are not ready. Confusion leads to problems. Problems lead to misbehavior, and misbehavior leads to constant struggling between teacher and students. The ineffective teachers each day become more stressed, burned out, frazzled, negative, cynical, and angry. They quickly learn to blame everyone and everything else for their problems. Effective teachers are ready. Effective teachers have the room ready. Unit C, classroom management. Effective teachers have the work ready. Unit D, lesson mastery. Effective teachers have themselves ready. Unit A, basic understandings. Unit B, positive expectations. Evertson and Anderson were the first to show the importance of effective classroom management at the beginning of the school year. They showed that teacher training was essential to achieve better classroom management practices. Through training to become effective teachers, they had classrooms ready. Effective teachers prevented problems by implementing a plan at the beginning of the school year. This plan had the following components: used time as effectively as possible, implemented group strategies with high levels of involvement and low levels of misbehavior, selected lesson formats and academic tasks conducive to high student involvement, communicated clear procedures of participation. Because effective teachers had the classroom ready, they were able to prevent many behavioral problems from occurring. Effective teachers are effective because they have far fewer student problems and are therefore able to get their students to work and to achieve. Consequently, effective teachers incur far less stress in having to deal with behavior problems and are able to leave each day feeling happy, accomplished, and proud. Instead of waiting for crises to arise, the effective teacher plans and is ready. Most important words. The three most important words to a painter, pilot, or chef are preparation, preparation, preparation. The three most important words to a teacher are preparation, preparation, preparation. A cluttered or barren room sends a negative message to your pupils that you don't care for them. A well-organized, attractive room sends a positive message that you respect them enough to provide a pleasant environment, and they will return the respect to you. A pleasant room feels good and calms people down. Invite your students to enter a room where you are prepared. A successful restaurant is ready. The table is ready. The table is set and waiting when you arrive at your reservation time. The dining room is ready. The ambiance is conducive to a pleasant dining experience. The staff is ready. You can expect good service because the staff is rehearsed and trained and has high expectations that you will enjoy your dinner. A successful teacher is ready. The work is ready. The desks, books, papers, assignments, and materials are ready when the bell rings. The room is ready. The classroom has a positive environment that is work-oriented. The teacher is ready. The teacher has a warm, positive attitude and has positive expectations that all students will succeed. Have your classroom ready every single day, especially the first days of school. This is obvious. When you walk into a restaurant, an office, or a store, you expect it to be ready for you. You become upset if things aren't ready. When people come to your home for a dinner party, you increase the possibility of having a successful dinner if your table is ready. When your team or group goes out to compete or perform, you increase the chances of winning if your team or group is ready. When the students come to a club meeting, they will probably have a successful meeting if the agenda has been well thought out. All battles are won before they are fought. Sun Tzu. Before you do anything else, organization is the key to effectiveness. Dust, clean, polish, arrange, decorate. Imagine royalty is coming. Who's more important than your students? Get a collection of cleaning supplies, liquids, sponges, mops, and rags. Spray and dust. Spray and clean. Spray and rub. Spray and polish. Get a bunch of folders and those plastic containers used for storage. Arrange your units of study in each and label. Discard, sort, and consolidate. Everything has its place. You will have learning organized for the year and will not hobble from day to day wondering what to do next. Research proves that a school's and classroom's cleanliness, orderliness, and character influences the student's behavior and the ability of a teacher to teach. You know very well that if a client calls and you are not ready, you will lose the sale. If you are not prepared for your interview, you may not have another one. If you are not ready when the teacher calls on you, you may receive a poor grade or low score. In the real world, you would be fired if you were not ready. For this real world, our students must be ready. We teach readiness by modeling readiness. In our work, in our class environment, in ourselves. People who are not organized send a loud message that they are not ready to teach. Readiness is the primary determinant of teacher effectiveness. The classroom should be arranged so that students and furniture don't get in the way of learning. Before you move a single desk, before you move any furniture or put anything on the classroom walls, here are some truisms. 1. A climate of work is what you want to establish during the first week of school. 2. The first week of school should stress large group organization and student procedures. 3. Spend your time on classroom management of student procedures rather than making your classroom look like a showcase. A few bare but clean bulletin boards, shelves, and plant containers won't disturb anyone. 4. Do not overarrange or overdecorate your room for the opening of school. 5. Your room should be neat and pleasant, but don't spend time making it the ultimate room you want by back-to-school night. 6. Don't bother having the learning center, classroom library, or resource center complete. You don't need a learning center on the first day of school. Wait a week or so after the students have the classroom rules and procedures and routines down pat before you allow them to work at the learning center. 4 basic rules of organization. 1. Separate school from personal work. The students are your priority. Don't get sidetracked by a personal matter. 2. Clean your desktop. Have labeled vertical files where you can see categories of papers rather than a catch-all pile of papers and materials on your desk. 3. Create a place for incoming and outgoing papers. Know where to put papers incoming for you and where to put papers to be returned to the students. 4. Consolidate, consolidate, consolidate. Get small boxes, clear plastic containers, magazine files, and desk organizers. The few minutes you spend to consolidate will save you hours of searching for items. Left brain people have files. Right brain people have piles. Scatterbrain people have piles of files. The following examples, like most examples in this book, are generalized and conceptual. Apply and adapt the examples to your grade level and situation. Prepare the floor space. Count the number of desks and chairs needed. Arrange to have damaged furniture replaced and sufficient furniture brought into the room. Ask for needed items well ahead of time. Do not be hostile if things are not as you want them, especially if your requests are made at the last minute. Administrators and custodians are truly helpful people and want quality education for the children as much as you do. Get to know them and you'll discover that they are competent, cooperative, compassionate, and helpful. They are not the ogres the negative teachers want you to believe they are. They will assist you with your needs. Even if you plan to change your room arrangement during the school year, it is wise to begin the year with the desks in rows facing the teacher. This minimizes distractions, allows you to monitor behavior more readily, and helps you to recognize and become familiar with the students in your class. Desks do not have to be in traditional rows, but all chairs should face forward so that all eyes are focused on you. Place students' desks where students can easily see you during whole class or small group instruction. Keep high traffic areas clear. Don't put desks, chairs, or tables in front of doors, water fountains, sinks, pencil sharpeners, or your desk. Have a strategic location ready for students who need to be isolated from the rest of the class. Go B. Students who face the board learn more. Seating arrangement impacts student learning and, amazingly, student health. Read more about this in the Going Beyond folder for Chapter 12 at effectiveteaching.com. When to prepare. You don't build your football team on game day. You don't drill a water well when you get thirsty. And you don't discuss procedures once an emergency has begun. That's not the time to discuss what should be done. Preparation is the key for teacher success. Prepare the work area. Arrange work areas and desks so that you can easily see and monitor all the students and areas, no matter where you are in the room. Students should be able to see you.